At BIMTube, our mission is clear: to elevate your digital knowledge. We deep dive into exploring the value of digital and data with conversations that not only inspire, but also instigate better information management.
Dr. Andrew Evans, who's a guest today, who I've known for several years. So thank you for your time and talking to me today. If you don't mind, if you just introduce yourself, just briefly your background, because obviously we all get into this field from, I think, very different backgrounds. Yes. And then currently maybe just what you're working on as well. So if you just introduce yourself, that'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. So thanks for the kind introduction there, Stephen. Thanks for having me on your podcast. My name's Andy Evans, or Andrew Evans, or I'll answer to anything, to be brutally honest to you. I'm used to that. I'm a surveyor by training, a land surveyor specifically by training. Effectively, I like to say it's well, right now, and what enthuses me most is anything to do with pitches and point clouds. That's the pitch. That's how I sort of present myself in a chunk. But in more detail, I'm the current president of the Chartered Institution of Civil Engineering Surveyors. So that puts a bit more of a frame on what I get up to. That's surveying specifically for civil engineering and infrastructure projects, even more focused. And my day job is I work for a company called Digital Construction Works. Digital Construction Works is all about connecting. It's that bit of BIM that we never quite got to. So you and I met years ago through BIM. And we always talked about that whole life cycle approach to getting the data and making decisions and getting better outcomes for people. But it always seemed to sort of miss a trick at the office to field stage. And what I'm doing every day is working on trying to improve that flow of data from the office to the field and back again. So it's closing that construction feedback loop for better decisions. That's me, I guess.
Great. Thanks. Go on, Andy. Go on, Andy. You wanted to add something.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then you asked, how did I get here? So, survey, Newcastle University, which was on the back of doing geography, maths and physics at A-level and just wanted to do something that got me outside. That's how I ended up standing behind bits of kit and pressing buttons. Newcastle, kind of at the time in 1995, 96, I graduated in 96. That was all the early start of the web. So one of the things they did as part of the course was, all right, guys, you're going to learn how to code in C++, and you're going to make a web page. So I'm guilty of producing the Newcastle University's first Canoe Club web page. And that doesn't exist. It didn't even make it onto the Wayback Machine. But there are remnants of it there still. And that kind of coalesced with the survey piece. And so I've ended up through a interesting route to get to where I am today.
Great. Thanks, Andy. So thanks for the introduction and your background. So obviously that survey and geomatics is a big theme, and that's currently what you do today. So when I briefed you on what hopefully we're going to talk about, obviously BIM in my context, I'm looking at better information management. Obviously, we know it doesn't really mean that. Sorry, as a standard, digital transformation and all the things that are related to that. But I think we were discussing before about how that's probably not something that's the challenge nowadays. It's all the peripheral things around that, about how we communicate, how do we get people engaged. It'd be good to get your take on what you think the biggest sort of challenge or challenges are, like number one, number two, number two, three, maybe, of how do we get digital, however we're defining that, including the ISO 9650 BIM, engage with people, and how do we improve it generally? I know it's a really broad, wide open question, but I guess what are the sort of top few things that you think you have to focus on in your career?
I think for me the piece that is overlooked, or no, it's not overlooked, it was mentioned right at the start. There's always this chat about people, process and technology. And then everyone goes, oh, yeah, absolutely. Got to be people, process, and technology. And then suddenly, boom, they're off and they're doing technology. And people and process are kind of, oh yeah, by the way, of course you're going to use this. You know, there's no decision there. And sort of what has become very, very clear over the last, I don't know how many years now, is that really right now what we have to do as an industry and what you and I need to be doing, and you're already hinting towards that, is talking about the bits that matter. And I think we've discussed this before, but with the survey for BIM stuff that we did together or worked on together in the past, it's that element of, right, really, really focused on the minute detail of setting something out in the right place. That's part of the foundation of making these projects, these construction projects work, and putting, you know, foundation of a smart city even. But what gets lost is that in as Survey for BIM, there's a group of really enthusiastic subject matter experts talking about getting survey data into the foundation of the model. And if you look at that in the context of the building, like the shard, for example, getting the foundations right on the shard is critically important for the whole thing, that the building stands up. But when you talk to anybody about the shard, all they really care about is how fast the lift gets into the viewing platform to look over London. So, and then there's a bit in the middle where you've got your structural engineers and the people that actually built the shard who are concerned about that. And they don't care about necessarily, well, of course they care about stuff being in the right place, but they don't want to know that detail. They don't need to know that detail. And what is clear is, how do you communicate the importance of this platform you're stood on, looking at this amazing view of the City of London, is here because of something that happened many years ago that was focusing very much on putting something in the right place. And we all know some of the stories about the Shard and how that got built, and you know, the work of Roma talking about that and being very vocal about that has helped to promote what goes on in construction, and that's great. But it's the what's missing, or not necessarily missing, but what needs to be talked about more, is that the bit that will expose the industry to those that may not be aware of what you can do as a career, what it means, what opportunities are in there. It's all very important to start talking about that stuff in easy to access, digestible, understandable terms that work for everybody. You know, ministers, school kids, my 10-year-old daughter. What do you do, Dad? Oh, I do stuff with robots. Oh, cool. She loves that. But what does it mean down the line, and how do you tell that story? It's all about telling the right stories and getting the engagement from the end.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely, I'd agree. I think it's the challenge around communication, isn't it? It's about how do we, yeah, like you say, tell the story. I think that comes up persistently when I talk to people, is how do we communicate? And then I often find it fascinating that is a skill, you know, not,
yeah,
you know, there are people that do comms marketing, and I think again, maybe not as directly, but other people wouldn't be thinking that. And I think so it's really interesting you say that challenge around comms and people and the story. Is there another take on anything else that you see, maybe a specific example, maybe you don't need to name names on companies, and where that's been overcome, or some good example either you've worked on or another? Sorry, I mean, I'm putting you on the spot because we didn't brief, but have you seen good examples of where someone's got the comms right, or they're making a good story about the value of what we do around digital and data?
So last year, I was looking at UK Highways, or Highways UK, whatever the event is called. I should know that because we're going to be attending in November. But what was interesting was one of the sessions that I dialed into and had a listen to. It was the kickoff for that session was talking about the way that National Highways, and I think they were National Highways by then, were talking about how they present the projects. So instead of talking about the road and how quick it was going to be to drive up the road, or what, how much time was going to be saved, they realized that they had to start talking about what it meant to the people that were going to be impacted by the road, what advantages it would mean, what would it, you know, how it was going to improve, not irrelevant what how much more efficient it would be to use that road, what impact it would have on the people where that road was being built. And that was they were making a big thing, well, not a big thing of it, but they were making it very clear that previously they hadn't been talking about new road projects in that way. And I think that was quite successful. I think, it was resonating with the audience. But also I think when you see, like I delve into local politics related to active travel, because I'm a keen cyclist, and I like to sort of get myself around as best I can under my own steam. because it's a good way to see places. It's a good way, it's just good fun. But you can start to see that push from national highways coming through at local level politics, where they're also realizing that they need to be talking about the benefits for the citizens of the city, not just, it's going to save you 5 minutes on your journey time. So I think that's, it's working, and people are going to the storytelling and that kind of stuff. And it's, I think I might have strayed off your...
No, it was a good example. You mentioned Highway. I just looked it up as well. It is Highways UK, the event.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really good example where we're talking about what the sort of the benefits are, and maybe outcomes is the ultimate, because you sort of were implying sort of health benefits and stuff like that. Again, that's where if people did talk about that directly in your specific example of cycling, for example, you think, well, what is the NHS, is the Department for Health, and this is rhetorical because they probably are involved in certain schemes that I'm not aware of, but are they involved? What are the outcomes? What I mean? It's like, and linking that with infrastructure. So we're talking about physical asset infrastructure, but actually you're talking about outcomes, and then pulling it all the way back to survey, and you gave your initial example was a foundation, a physical foundation. You think, but if it's not a building, then it's the infrastructure foundations of a network of cycle paths. And again, all these different disciplines and domains that need to come together to make the case worthwhile. I find it quite fascinating that when we build other transport networks, for example, rail, HS2 is one example, we'd be looking at the housing developments along I'm straying off topic now, but just I would be interested, this is a genuine conversation around the amenities, for example, along cycle networks. I mean, that would be another take, wouldn't it? Say, we've got investment, or where are the cafes?
And people know that. I mean, again, as an example, so there's two things to pick up on there. The mantra that we got taught at Newcastle Uni back in, started there in 93, the mantra was work from the part to the whole, because ultimately you're doing that there. And that's pretty standard throughout geospatial, so it's nothing special. But it's exactly picked up on what you're talking about there. Where are the cafes? That's a small part of HS2, for example, or a cycle network or whatever it may be. And so there's that element. But then there's also this sort of connecting it all up. Something the Ordnance Survey talk about a lot is looking at the whole picture, looking at the whole big scheme. You look at the work that National Digital Twin, the sort of the whole idea of rolling that out is to have a database of information that's available for everybody. Now, the practicalities of that are something completely different, but the idea is good, and the idea makes sense, as we both probably agree on that. Whether the rollout will be something we can disagree on, of course. But it's also then enabling people to think and know what questions to ask as well. So, for example, with the going back to this local cycle network stuff that I was working on in Chester, which is where I live. They were saying, we need some origin destination data to make decisions on where, what's the right route? Where should we put in a cycle lane? What, all this kind of stuff. And I'm sat there going, well, that's a GIS question. And it would appear that they hadn't really considered that if you just throw your data into a spreadsheet, do a lookup table, you can start, working out what vehicles are going from where at what time. And then you can put it on a map. And as soon as it was on a map with a graph of volumes of vehicles going over, so I'm like, well, that's really useful. And I'm sat there scratching my head going, surely someone's already done this. I can't be the first person to have looked at and thought about this. But it's that piece of, we've been in GIS and mapping and surveys since, I'm sure you've been in as long as I have. I'm not going to guess how old you are, Steve, and I'm not going to embarrass you.
It'll go the wrong way if you guess. It's all right, exactly. For sure, because
it's obvious to the likes of us, and it isn't. And then it comes back to that storytelling, the communication piece. How do you get those facts to back up the story?
Yeah, I th- no, it's And I think that exactly geographic information systems and that kind of spatial analysis is their tools, aren't they? Again, yeah. Clearly we'd argue that GIS is a system and all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, it's ultimately, we know the tools, and you know different tools to me, like more geomatic survey that I wouldn't know all the capabilities. But it's having that tool kit available comes natural. And I think your point touched on digital twins and national digital twin program. I think that's quite interesting as well, because there are things that we're involved with that enable that as well, particularly spatial analysis. GIS is part of it, a core part of it, I'd argue, but still part of it. And it's still, that's where we can go further and say it's the communications between the domains and disciplines, which is now the challenge as well. Because I guess before we were talking about sort of wider comms, but just completely changing topic if I can, because specifically what we're talking about now, I literally could talk about all day, because that's obviously our sort of passion is the comms. Yeah. So we're clear about that. I think, and just to quickly round that off to say people, process, technology, which I know you talked about another, clearly that by name, by definition, is from pure IT, from the 60s, from ITIL. But again, unless someone's a pure IT professional, they wouldn't know that. So again, it's now made it out into the wild, as it were. Mm. So completely changing topic, just to put you on the spot, because we've both been involved in geo business, the conference in London for several years.
Yeah, okay.
What does geospatial mean to you, and what does geomatics mean to you?
Wow.
So this is not a trick question. Remember, there'll be people watching that are not in our domain.
Yeah.
This podcast, and in fact, that's the core audience, I would suggest. So,
start
either way around. Geomatics, right. That'll be a new one for a lot of people. Remember, geomatics itself, and then geospatial. Sorry, I'll
stop talking. Okay, so let's start with geomatics, because that's an interesting one. But very, very recently, I can't remember where I saw it, but I saw somebody say, we finally got rid of that stupid term geomatics. I can't remember who it was, where it was, but it was in the last month that I've seen it somewhere. Now, that's an interesting one for me, because geomatics was when I was at Newcastle at final year, they changed the name of the department from Department of Surveying and Mapping to geomatics at Newcastle, and they'd asked us as students what we thought about that. I think they probably already decided they were going to do it, but they just wanted some confidence from the graduating students what we thought about geomatics. And I've always looked at it and gone, geomatics, what does it mean? Well, you have mathematics. It's obvious, isn't it, that it's just geomatics. So it's mathematics about geo. That's ultimately. And then you can go into the depths of the description of what that covers. It's a very sweeping, broad term that means that you can then, as a department, as an academic institution, you can cover all sorts of stuff. Anything to do with geo, you can throw it in there. And so the geomatics part is, for me, has always been, it's the understanding of the theory of applying geo to solving or resolving what's going on in the world, measuring it, reporting on it, analysing it. So that's my sort of thought. I don't tend to use it as a term, actually, to be honest with you. But at the time, I do remember the conversations were like, well, if we talk about surveying, everyone just, if you say, oh, I'm a surveyor, everyone just assumes that you go around people's houses and give them a value on the property, and for someone that had just been 3 years doing surveying and mapping, you're like, I'm not having that, you know. So that was the interesting one. Sorry, you're going to say something there.
And some people, I was going to say, and some people do. So of course, I work partly in property now. Some people do go around and look at. I think that's the challenge, is that we will mix with people that is what they do, and I think that's the challenge, isn't it?
So, and exactly. And then if you then sort of contrast that with, you know, I'm now with the, well, have been for years, civil engineering surveying, that does cover the geospatial and the commercial sides of civil engineering surveying, because your QS is in there, your cost valuers, your procurement team, it's all survey, it's all working with information that has been surveyed, whether it's physically measured or whether it's been reported in an analysis of quantities or whatever it may be. Anyway, that's off topic a little bit from your question. Geospatial, as a definition, is more about understanding the relationships of location tagged elements, objects, whatever it may be. And I think that's my differentiator between the two. I tend to throw geospatial around a lot more now because it seems to have more weight than certainly than geomatics does as a word. Either works. The problem with geomatics is it's a bit abstract in the end. Yes. Can you still use it? Yeah, of course. It's just another way of saying stuff. And I'm a funny one with names and titles and stuff. If you can't tell the story in simple terms, then the title's not going to help.
Yeah, and so I'm exactly with you. That's why I want your perspective with it. So I mean, thanks for that. I think it might be the case. I was going to say we wouldn't know each other, but it's not true because we connected through the BIM activity. But just for geo business, for example, again the conference in London, the connection there is geospatial.
Yes.
Again, that's the interesting thing. Me with a GIS background, you're more with a survey and GIS and wider background. I think that's a common thread, but it's not clear necessarily what we mean. And it's a good thing, right? Because now we would include drones. We could include aerial imagery, remote sensing, which is a different niche traditionally, isn't it, or a different sector. So
it's all geospatial. It's all geo. You know.
Yeah. So I thought I'll ask you. You'll be the one to know. But I completely agree with your sentiment.
I don't know about knowing. I'll give you an opinion. Certainly.
No, that's good. That's what I want. So I wouldn't normally focus on specifically the technology, but because that's certainly an area. We've already made the point that that's not necessarily the focus. But it'd be remiss of me not to ask about some of the latest technology. So obviously, most people will be familiar with laser scanning and drones and that. But is there something? What's some of the latest technology to enable? So if we talk about better information management generally about how we capture data, serve up information to people to make decisions for what's out there that probably I'm missing? Is there any latest version of scanning or?
So I would say that we're actually seeing. So one of our sadly no longer with us, but one of the guys that used to work with us really focused on the democratization of reality capture he would talk about and it's quite a very lofty way of looking at how accessible is it, but it's not necessarily scanning as such. I think we're seeing that kind of coalesce into it's a laser scanner. You either stick it on a tripod, hold it in your hand, or you put it on a backpack, or you drive it. I think the interesting thing for me is the hybrid of combining scanning and imaging together, which has always been possible ever since I got into scanning, which was 2004. I got my hands on a laser scanner for the first time. It's always been about having the point cloud and the images together. So, that hasn't changed. I think it's interesting to see the size, the accessibility, the ease of use is coming down. You still need to know. It's interesting. It still is experts to get it right, I think. But if that procedure is correct, it's quite easy to do it and get it consistent. And that's the most important part. What's interesting for me is what's coming in terms of the software for analysis after that. So. With my salesman hat on, there's things like Verity, for example, which is a point cloud to model analysis software where you can grab your 3D model, you can throw a point cloud in there, and you can do your as-built verification to millimeter level, which is obviously dependent on the scan quality or scan precision.
Yeah.
But fabulous technology, super quick, gets the results and the analysis quick and allows you potentially to make decisions at the construction phase of saying, well, what happened today? Well, we scanned it and it took 5 minutes to scan it. And there's the 3D model and that's what was supposed to be there. And although you could send someone out to go and look at it and say, tick a form, it's there or it's not, you can also get quantification immediately. But more importantly, it's getting to the stage where it's affordable and easy. Now, the surveyors in the room would go, you don't want it affordable and easy because that's where the mistakes happen. Because people just go out and think they can do it. But arguably, if you want this to be, I'm going to throw in the metaverse into here just for fun. If you want to have a digital version of the world where all the information you need in that digital representation is required to help us interact with what the world is and add value to our experience, don't know whether this is a right or a wrong way to go, but the foundation of that is a sensed 3D representation of our surroundings completely. Now, that's not going to be done using survey because there just aren't enough surveyors to do it. So then all that data needs to come from stuff that the cars are picking up, people's phones walking around there. And it's something that I put into my sort of presidential interview back in whenever that was now. I was sort of jokingly saying, you know, look what you can do with your phone now, just photogrammetry based. And then you can buy a phone that's got LiDAR and photogrammetry on it. It's next level. And it's so accessible.
Thanks. I think that's really good. So I quickly noted down VR, AR as you were talking, and then you beat me to and talked about metaverse. So I think it's interesting the different terminologies as well. I know that's semantically different to both of them slightly, but or is it augmented reality discussed? But I think that's really interesting. You mentioned that because that's creating the demand.
Yes.
And I mean, I know I'm just paraphrasing what you've already said, but I think that's where clearly professional levels only cannot fulfill that. And everyone, like you say, has got a sensor. Recently got an iPhone 13, and like you say, it's got the laser on it. I mean, absolutely good enough laser scans of a room that you can do, again, for whatever purpose, probably not engineering purposes. But I think that's where it becomes... I don't want to use the word arms race, but I can't think of something else. It's a continual progression, isn't it, around what the professional level... So just another parallel, it's the same with sort of GIS, geographic information systems, where we have professional-grade desktop tools. And now a lot of what I used to do early in my career, people with very little or completely no skill could replicate. And it's... maybe slightly different in survey because of the precision, but it's like you're saying, it's starting to become like that, isn't it? Slowly. Yeah.
And it's not only replicating, it's replicating it for free with respect to GIS. You know, the tools that are out there now, the stuff I was describing about the active travel analysis earlier, that was all done using QGIS. You know, and I'm sure probably not the place to say it, and it's maybe not professionally sounded. To sort of say you can do all this stuff for free, but actually you can do all this stuff for free, and that's great. I think that's absolutely fantastic. It's a real accelerator. What's interesting with the and I need to caveat my use of metaverse. I often throw it in just to get a response or get a question there. It doesn't exist. We know that, but it could do and it will do. And it's certainly, you see, I think the important thing to recognize is that someone like me saying it doesn't exist is just some old fart who the kids are going, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Let's take a quick break.
Do you need help where to start with BIM and the ISO 19650 series of standards? If so, then our partners BIM Enable can help. Not only do they provide training, they can also offer implementation services and a strategic overview for your organization with a roadmap of what to do. They specialize in information management of all kinds, and BIM is just part of this, but also asset information management. So why don't you go to bimenable.com? That's bimenable.com. But okay. So I mean, I'm certainly wouldn't be an expert to discuss this. But to say it doesn't exist, I'm not sure. I mean, wouldn't you argue? I mean, this is the point. Maybe you wouldn't, to say that augmented reality, by definition, is the beginnings of the metaverse. So when I hold my phone up, I can see through the wall. I can see cables in the wall.
Yeah.
Well, that they're not. You know, that represent, they are physically there, hopefully, but that's a representation. Maybe that's the metaverse. Maybe, I mean, it depends how far you take it. Maybe a 3D representation of a building is metaverse if I superimpose it.
And that's the interesting thing, 100%. And that's why I throw that in there, because in my view, I don't care what it's called. What I want to see is digital data that I can access in in context with my surrounding situations there. I don't necessarily want to see a full rendered 3D model overlaid on my real model. Why would I want that? But I do want to know where, if I put my finger on the point of the wall here and it says, no, there is a pipe there. You should have, don't drill there, you idiot. You know, that's what I'd like to see. Now, the practicalities of actually putting that in place, it's next level. So I was involved back in, it was the University of Nottingham, on a subsurface visualization, AR for subsurface visualization was the name of the project. Fascinating project. Technology was awesome. There's some real groundbreaking stuff going on. We were using centimeter level GPS for the position. And we were combining that with accelerometers and gyros. And we had some Heath Robinson thing, that the virtual binoculars we ended up with. And awesome. It worked. Didn't have any data. So we did. We went up into with a water company up in Yorkshire, and we were trying to overlay their 3D data on the road. And of course, there was no 3D information; it was all 2D. So we'd set up the system, and it's great. And you'd look, if it was flat, it was working perfectly. But in Yorkshire, there's lots of hills, so the water network disappeared into one hill and was floating in midair in the other direction. But that was in 2001.
Yeah,
you know, and you see what you can do now. It's phenomenal.
It's always the Z value that will get you. I think it's quite interesting because it's always been there, right? But it's always been a specialism in GIS. 3D is now native in most GIS, which won't be a big thing for you, but having a survey background. But anyway, I think it's a big shift culturally, because then it's just there. And then maybe slightly change the topic. I think it's probably not quite changing the topic. What is your perspective on digital twins? And all I mean from that is the name around them, and have you dealt with any clients, or for example, that are naming them by that name? Say, we would like a digital twin, because we're fully aware what it is. But I'd be interested: are people asking for them? Are they aware of them? And what do you think about that term?
So we dealt with clients asking for digital twin. I think it's again one of those things where I've also had experience with a client that was. He was complaining to me that the point cloud he'd asked for didn't do what he wanted. And so I then, with my surveyor hat on, said, well, okay, what did you actually ask for? What did you think you were going to get? And now let me explain that what you got is what you asked for, and you weren't advised to ask for the right thing. And I think that's what we're seeing, is that there's a lot of buzz around digital twin. I personally think it's a great description of what it is. I think we run the risk of having the same issue we've had with BIM, in that it's an acronym that makes sense, but is sometimes too complicated to explain. And it shouldn't be, because it's not exactly difficult, but it can be very hard to explain it in the way that makes sense for the project. And I think there is a risk with digital twin that we have the same issue. I think there's a couple of interesting things where, you know, I would... if someone comes to me saying, you know, how can you help us out with the digital twin here? Then my immediate response is, you know, that it's more than just a reality model. Because that's the key. It's not just a digital representation. It's more than that. And sometimes you'll get the response back. Oh, in that case, yeah, we just want a mesh, you know?
Yeah.
So there is that. And you see, and I think at the moment people are enjoying having a bit of a moan about it and sort of setting up social media wars just to have a bash.
I wouldn't be privy to if that's going on, but I think, so I'd agree with your sentiment, it can be a hook. So I think that the challenge with BIM, the more classic term of BIM, certainly around the a 3D model or a 4D model, whatever. Yeah. I think that's the paradox now. Obviously, ISO 19650 series of standards are literally a rule of standards, and so again, there are things you have to do if you want to be part of the ISO, the international BIM standard. I think at least digital twin is an instinctive terminology that you can show. And do you see what I mean? So I think that people can look at it, and then I think it's the work behind it is the challenge.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is that it's the term digital twin is much more accessible and easy to explain. And I think ultimately it's I do believe it's a good thing for promotion of what we do. And I say we as in people that work within geospatial or work within engineering and construction. When we talk about a digital twin to somebody that's the client or the public, maybe it's already a step too far to talk about digital twins. But it makes it, it does make it easy to explain. You know, everyone knows what a twin is. And it's a digital one.
And it's a hook, isn't it? Because again, yes. map is good for some occasions, but not.
Yeah.
I still think it's interesting that drawing, there'll be some meetings I'm still in and people talk, quite rightly, are talking about drawings.
Yeah.
And you think, at least we've got a different term now. So thanks for that. And again, I think it does all come back to the comms. So one of your first points is around how do we communicate what we do in a way that's meaningful to people. And even your first example of the foundation on the, you mentioned the shard, I think it's really interesting that particularly what you do is potentially literally surveying a foundation, as in a physical foundation. Yeah. And then a lot of what I do and now as well is about the sort of metaphorical information foundation. I think, oh my goodness, this is too many metaphors. But I think it's getting the base, anyway, in a nutshell, it's getting the basics right, isn't it? Yeah. I think that's certainly with people with survey skills, that's where we have to get this right. It has to be have the correct precision.
And I'll pick you up on something there, that you're getting the basics of the base right. but you know, and I will mention someone else that you might want to have a chat with at some point, a guy called Simon Navin, who you know very well.
Yes.
When we before that shard description analogy came out, me and him sat and had a lot of chat about, again, this was about survey for BIM and what we were talking about, and he'd obviously been talking elsewhere wherever he was working at the time, specifically about space and time, and ultimately what we do is deal in space and time. If you want to break it right down to the basics, what do surveyors do? What do geospecialists do? Geospatial specialists do deal with space and time. It's all about knowing what the space is and how that space is going to change. You know, that's great. And I always wanted to be an astronaut, so that's cool.
Let's take a quick break.
Don't forget, you can catch up on all our podcasts in video and audio by visiting our website at bim.tube. That's bim.tube.
I think it's really, really, that's really poignant, because also the sharing of information over time as well. I know you're talking about the information itself, but then the layer on top of that.
Exactly.
You're in records management, whether it's a survey or whatever, in a wider information manage better information management context, back to the you are investing. Collectively investing in hopefully in better information for people in the future to use. So I think that's, again, that's a parallel on a level above it. We're having to think about what people would need in the future. Just if I can, slightly shift gear. So again, there might be people watching this that don't have a background in survey, geomatics, geospatial.
Yeah.
Where would you say, what industry bodies, hopefully you'll name the obvious one first, what industry bodies and for maybe websites do you recommend people go to learn more? So particularly maybe as a non-specialist coming into these things. So what are the industry bodies that people should have a look at?
I mean, clearly the obvious one first, it would have to be the AGI, wouldn't it?
Course it would be for sure. But what would you say? You might have another one you want to say first.
You know, so known fully well while I'm up to at the moment. Yeah, that's the Chartered Institution of Civil Engineering and Surveyors, which you'll find at CICES.org. That's probably very easy to get into. I'd say from a survey, like specifically getting in the weeds survey point of view, the Survey Association's full of useful information. The RICS, the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors, has a wealth of information on coordinate systems and specifications for survey, that kind of stuff. I would also be looking at the ICE, AGI, as I mentioned already, Survey for BIM, of course, wealth of information and expertise in that group. What else? And then there's a load of good stuff on LinkedIn at the moment. So one of my other little side projects is the Construction Verification Initiative. So there's a LinkedIn group there with some like-minded individuals.
Do you want to tell us about what that is and what the what
yeah
you're doing?
Yeah. So construction verification. I think I touched on it earlier about you know, being able to verify your as-built against design. And the idea there, construction verification, you know, it's been technically possible for a long time now. And arguably, you would say, well, isn't that just what setting out engineers do anyway? Isn't that the whole thing? You know, why do we need to make it more complicated? Well, construction verification is taking what the work of what setting out engineers do and the guys that are checking as-built, doing as-built checks. The limitation is that they're produced, typically would produce a spreadsheet with a load of deltas on it for variation in easting, northing and height for design versus actual. Yeah. And there's more to it than that. And presenting a spreadsheet of results is totally impenetrable for many people unless you're a surveyor. So how do we communicate better about progressive assurance for ensuring that the building got built in the way it was, stage by stage? And it's now, I would say, is this something that can be done quickly? It can be done accurately and with precision as well. And it can be, the results can be presented graphically. And the group that's there, it's an open group. Anyone's welcome. If you've got any interest at all in survey setting out, mapping, project management, whatever it may be, but the quantification of what has been built and trying to improve the quality, not improve the quality of the build, but report on the quality of the build. Construction verification is a throwaway term, not necessarily a throwaway term, but that's the term that's being used at the moment to talk about that. And it's using modern methods to effectively confirm build quality throughout construction, not just at handover or pre to handover. That kind of thing. So I don't know if I described that well. I'll probably mess it up completely.
Your last point there makes absolute sense, that you're looking at, obviously, assurance is what is sort of the main thrust of it, but then also the optimization of the construction process itself, if it's checked. And again, that there are parallels. I keep name dropping ISO 19650, but again, that lead the BIM international BIM standard. That's where that lead, that could be a framework to enable this.
Yeah. And it comes back to where we started, which was, you know, it was when we sort of first said about this, that bit about going from the office to the field and ensuring that continuous feedback loop through construction. When I first got involved with BIM, I was like, oh, well, that's obvious. Surely we should be doing that. Because I was looking at it from a surveyor's point of view and saying, oh, that's brilliant. You go from the office and you go to the field and then you can keep that update loop going. It just wasn't happening. And the construction verification piece is helping to enable that. But not only that, it has a cadence that can run in parallel with what the project planners need and what the project managers need to make decisions in the right time. You know, it really is there. The challenge that Construction Verification Initiative, which is the name we're using for that group, has is that there's a group of people there know it's possible. And again, a lot of what we're talking about is how do we communicate this? What case studies do we have? What evidence do we have to show that there's ROI on this technology? Is it easy to use? Because classically people go, oh, laser scanner. Yeah, we tried that on site. It took, you know, we were waiting weeks before we got anything out of it. And there's members of that group that know and can show how quickly the return on just a day's survey is, you know.
Because you don't know what I've noted down here. I think a lot of what we're talking about is enabling a process to become more efficient processes.
Mm-hmm.
And I, and again, that's where the, again, not present company excluded because this is your profession, but I think it can be challenging for sort of technical people to then have, you know, business process optimization. And again, back to your very first point, or one of your very first points, is around then the communications around the benefits or outcomes or consequences of not doing this, or you know, again, that's a parallel theme, isn't it? But you know, people perhaps need help with that. But I think back to everything we talk about, I think often it's process optimization. Just focused on that, is this might be a silly question maybe, but do people actually talk about process optimization? Because that's almost my passion for my day job, to say, well, actually, we're talking about a process. You know, we are, let's map out the process, as in visualize. Is that something you've done? Is that something clients ask for?
Doesn't everybody talk about process optimization?
No, they don't. That's my day job. I mean, are you being serious? I mean, who does talk about that? But do they map it out on a whiteboard, though? Is that something you actually do?
That's something we do. And I say we, that's my day to day. I would argue that other people that I've talked to around this subject, yes, but maybe that's just geospatial experts that do that. I don't know. I think that's not true, because I know that the commercial managers within the ICS membership do it. I know that there's guys within the RSCS and the Survey Association that do it. I know there's people in GIS that are involved with process. So quick answer to your question is yes, people do process optimization. You know, my wife's a GP, and she is totally focused on process optimization because they have limited resources. They're not getting enough funding from the government, blah, blah, blah. I can go off on a political hobby horse all you like. I'm going to stop there. However, she is spending all her time trying to optimize the process to ensure that they can serve their patients better and ensure that they have as much time as possible with the patients to get the right outcomes for their patients, because that's what they want to do that's why they're doctors.
Yeah, it's really interesting you then give that specific example, because we talk about, or not we, but generally people around digital and information improvement, and then there's obviously a subsection of that which is around geospatial. We talk about outcomes, but it's really the consequences. People focus on it when they have to, typically. And I think that's been one of the challenges historically, is that people don't have to change. There isn't, and now people are, you know, rightly or wrongly, we have to focus on where can we save money. What are the, you know, that, and maybe that focus hasn't been there, and that's maybe been the challenge.
Maybe I would argue that. Well, I won't speak out of turn on this because I only get the edge of it, but ultimately it's a lack of resources that is forcing process optimization in all areas: schools, health, infrastructure. It's a lack of resource, but I think I'd like to think that nearly everybody that I've seen in these industries, there's always some people somewhere working on process optimization, because ultimately there's a great podcast, other than this podcast, of course, there's another great podcast where it was an interview. I'll have to dig out the name for you, but basically the discussion was about process in optimizing manufacturing and why you would do that. Surely a company that's selling stuff isn't interested in optimizing, and you know, I can't remember the complete, I've completely messed it up actually, but anyway, the point being that the pushback was, you're not going to improve this because there's no value in it for you, because you can make your margin on selling at a higher price. Why are you going to produce stuff for less money and try and optimize all your process? And it's like, well, actually we can increase the margin and we can build stuff better and you get a better product in the end. So of course we're looking to spend on process optimization because it's in our interest for our customers and the manufacturing internally as well. And it was that, there was some discussion on that. I'll dig it out for you.
Yeah, please, if you would, and then I can add a link, that'd be great. And I think it's good that you mentioned manufacturing, because of course that's the origins of the term digital twin, and Lean Six Sigma we know is from manufacturing, and the Toyota Way, one of the seminal books in that area. So business process optimization, I guess why I mention it is because it is a highly regarded and very mature specialism.
Yes.
But in manufacturing, so, you know, particularly origins in Japan and then particularly in the US and hopefully everywhere now. But I think it's really interesting where that, until digital twin as a term, we weren't necessarily getting the same people in the room. It's quite interesting. One of the BIM courses I teach at, for the Institution of Civil Engineers, we have a V framework, you know, for checking. But again, that's from manufacturing. So we are definitely seeing learnings come purely from manufacturing over to broader physical asset management, and also things like systems. Again, just to throw it out there, do you are you or your clients talking about system of systems? This is another broader term that's enabling the digital twin work in the UK, is looking at system of systems, systems thinking.
Yeah, because the challenge, coming back to that challenge about digital twin, what do you think of the term? There is no one digital twin. There will be multiple digital twins that would make up the national digital twin, for example, because it just cannot work as one single entity. It just doesn't work like that. So quick answer is yes.
Yeah. And I think it's right. It's like a fractal, isn't it? It's like a repeating pattern. And I'm sure we're comfortable with that. I think that's where maybe the original sort of terminology of BIM got misinterpreted to say, well, we have a huge BIM model for the whole of a railway. I think, you're going to have one big computer to handle that. I think that's where it's actually about the rules, the processes. And we're coming towards the end of our session, but you've already mentioned some industry bodies that people can look at. I just wonder if there's any, I'm just throwing this in there, but any events or any sort of physical events that you go to around this domain that people might be interested now that we're starting to go back to events?
Yeah. So anything where my company are there, of course.
Yeah. Could be verticals. I'm particularly fascinated in verticals, not just arguably we do the horizontal, don't we? But are there any verticals you go to as well?
Yeah. I mean, how long's a piece of string? I think just thinking what's coming up on our calendar, there's the things like Bauma. So there's a massive machine show in Munich coming up in October. That's all about moving data to machines and back and forth, telematics, all that kind of stuff. That's quite interesting. I'm sure there'll be a lot of, autonomous vehicle stuff, interesting and worth attending. And there's plenty of those conferences going on. I went to a international cost engineers conference in Rotterdam earlier this year. And that's not somewhere where I'd naturally go, because obviously as a civil engineer and surveyor, I've been heavily focused on geospatial ever since I was in there. And there's a whole half of our membership that I touch on, I'm on the edge of it. And so we put a white paper out in May, Transforming the Civil Engineer, which touched specifically on the digitalization of that piece of the industry. And on the back of that, we were then presenting that paper at Institution of Cost Engineers. And for me, the overlap was immense, but I hadn't really, that wasn't on my radar. It should have been, and it has been over the last 3 years, but it wasn't really on my, I wouldn't have said that was where I naturally sit. But there's always overlap in all this stuff. It's fascinating. But I think ultimately, the thing I was interested in, having a chat with a guy via Twitter this morning, where the question he asked specifically was, if you can do autonomous vehicles using AI, why can't robots wash up? Right. And so I then had a flippant throwaway comment, taking the mickey out of the whole thing and just having a laugh at it, because it's a ridiculous statement, but there are, you can go down a whole rabbit hole with that. But ultimately then I followed up with a comment saying, look, feel about the layers, it's data all the way down, data, that is it. And I think that for me is anywhere. So then in terms of verticals, where should you go and look? Anywhere that people are talking about data, which is pretty much everywhere, should be an area of interest for anybody that's looking to expand on their career horizons.
Yeah. Great, thank you. And I think it's interesting, even in the central UK government, for example, they've got property professions, and then there is a information and data profession as again, how are they linked? Do they talk? I know that they do, but it'd be interesting the overlap between, because like you say, data is obviously pervasive to all domains. You probably just answered it, but we've just got literally a couple of minutes left. Occasionally people ask me, so is artificial intelligence here? So I know what answer I give, but what would you say? I get asked quite a lot, say, when will we get AI? And what do you say to people? What examples do you give of current AI? Because I think you just reminded me when you talked about the washing up. I think people don't quite understand what it is.
What
what do you say to say, we have AI, here's an example?
Again, I like to play games with this sort of stuff a little bit, and I'm guilty of not taking myself seriously enough, or not taking the question seriously enough, perhaps. Is it here? Yeah, 100%. Is it Terminator here? No, not really. And some of the stuff we worked on, is it reliable? Not always. Do we have things that need to be sorted out? Yes. Are we going to be reporting to our robot overlords in the next 5 years? Don't think so. But there's some pretty impressive stuff going on with that kind of technology. So, but then you think back to Doctor Who, and you think back to Daleks, and you think back to, oh no, stairs, or oh heck, how about my batteries? Or, you know, okay, people are working on this, and you know, I shouldn't be so flippant about it, because it's serious stuff, and there's some very good discussions about what could, where AI could go. But yeah, it's being used today. There's some great stuff going on in image recognition. And I think I saw something just the other day that was talking about the AI, the use of AI in GIS specifically. There was a cognition, again, I'll see if I can dig out the link for that, find that for you. That was something that was on my to read shelf.
Yes.
But yeah, yes. The quick answer is it here? Yes.
And I think so. Thank you. If you do share them links, I'll make sure they're available. And I think that's the thing. It keeps moving, doesn't it? Obviously. And I think that's perhaps a challenge for, or could be a challenge for some people, where they've more traditionally used to doing a similar thing. And of course, with technology and data centric activities, it keeps developing. Just for the benefit of people either listening or watching this, I didn't brief you on what the topics would be. And I think that's really, it's really good that we're coming at it at the same perspective around what the challenges are, where the benefits are. The only question I wrote down was what's next, and I think, but you did touch on emergent technologies, and now we're talking about AI, so I'd suggest we've covered that. We've also mentioned where people can learn more information, so that's good. And if you think of anything else that links, that is, to where to find more information, I can add them as well.
I think the only thing I would say there is that I won't be able to find some of those links. So I think the best thing to do is probably just quite happy for you to add to this. If you want to contact me, grab me on Twitter. It's probably the easiest way, or find me on LinkedIn.
So, okay. So you're happy for people to find you on LinkedIn. That's okay. That's good.
Yeah.
And talk about these topics and broader, and how you can help.
Yeah. I'm here ready to chat.
Great. Okay, thanks, Andy. We'll finish it there, because I could go on all day. I know you could too, but we'll thank you for your time. So thanks, Dr. Andy Evans, for your time and speaking with me today. And it was really good to talk to you, and I'll see you soon, I hope.
Thanks, thank you. Appreciate it.